Afternoon. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel, and today I'm so happy to have Kelly Hoffer here in the studio for an ultra special edition of Living Writers with Kelly Hoffer.
Hello.
Fundraiser show. And you know it's either fundraiser when you hear the opening bars of Survivor, shout out to Survivor, Eye of the Tiger, or that you're back in your small town that you left a long, long time ago, and you're driving somewhere and it just came on the radio.
Homecoming, yeah, for sure.
But instead, it's fundraiser. It's fundraiser. Fundraiser week.
Yes.
Here at CBN. And lots of great things are going on here at the station. And we're going to have, I'm just so pleased to be able to talk with you, Kelly, today. You're going to be launching your latest book, Fire Series, out into the world today at Literati.
Yes.
Right after
this. Right after this. I will be walking from here to there. I will be
leaving the station a few blocks to Literati.
Yep.
And a shout out to Literati, Hillary, and all the folks at Literati, DJ Lamb Chop, who's here in house, who's here actually, because it's fundraiser show. Have I mentioned that yet? Fundraiser show. And we'd love for you to call in. We're not usually, Living Writers is not usually a call-in show, but today it's about community.
The more the merrier.
Kelly, I think that's one of your mantras. Is it?
I don't know.
It is today.
It is today. Yeah.
And so the number to call, folks, is 734-763-3500. That's 3500. And you could talk to our DJs who are here. We've got four phone lines. So that means technically we could have four callers right now and we could manage it. It's amazing. It's like, yeah, talk about community. Call in, talk to some of your favorite DJs. We've got Bradley C, DJ, Elias Simon, a DJ, and Sarah Min is in the house, and as I said, DJ Lamb Chop is here, and these DJs are all here waiting to talk with you about what you love about WCBN, our community here. That's a little force to be reckoned with in Ann Arbor, and going out over the interwebs as well on WCBN.org, where you could head to donate. There's a donate button. Head to our website and you can donate there. And there's cool gifts for donating, t-shirts, sweatshirts, a mug designed by Mia.
Wow.
A slip mat if you have a turntable, lots of cool stuff. Little gifts to us for you showing up for the community, donating, whatever you'd like. I don't think we have a thermometer this year. So except for what's outside. But yes. So let's see. I'll also just say one more thing before we get to the the exciting stuff with Kelly here at the table. I'd like to say support for programming comes from the nonprofit Michigan and State Theaters, Ann Arbor's only independent movie theaters, presenting Michigan-made films, woo, the Cinetopia Film Festival, and a year-round lineup of film, live stage shows, and concerts you won't find anywhere else located in downtown Arbor. And like Manos was saying earlier today, WCBN is also located in downtown Ann Arbor. We're just here on the edges, the fringes of the campus, where the line between town and university blurs. We're underground, like most good things are. And you won't find things that you hear here over the airwaves pretty much anywhere else.
Yeah.
Like today, I get to talk, and you all are in on it. I get to talk to Kelly Hoffer today about her book, Fire Series.
Mm-hmm. It's a pleasure to be here.
And thanks so much for being here.
Yeah.
Thanks for writing the book.
Oh, man. And I had not much choice in that. It's something I just did.
So is that what writing is like for you? Like feeling like a compulsion of sorts?
I don't know if I would say it's a compulsion. I do think that makes it sound like I'm a more consistent writer than maybe I am.
I get that.
But I do think that I had no idea what book I was writing until it was written, is often the way that I feel when I'm writing. So I really like to be surprised by whatever it is that I'm writing, and I figure out what is happening sort of after the fact.
When you say after the fact, do you feel like you have like a number of poems that you've been making?
Right. So I think often when I sit down, I'm just trying to make a poem, you know, but because I'm a kind of person who has specific obsessions and desires and fears and anxieties, right? Something happens in that practice of just trying to make a poem over and over again that a body starts to take shape, right? And then that's the book. And then, you know, at the end of the, or towards the editing process, you can start to make some decisions about shaping that body. But
in our new poems then becoming part of the body, or is it more like, yes, you're nodding.
I mean, it can be. I think I've had the experience a couple times where between my first and second book, and now I'm working on a third manuscript that's not this book, but there's this little squishy time in the transitions where, you know, I'm making poems and really wondering, you know, which world does this belong to? Which weird party is this? You know, like I have these couple weird parties that are happening in my basement, I guess. And I don't know which corner to send a poem to necessarily, because it's kind of in an in-between space.
But then gradually you might see, oh, it's as more poems
right.
come, you might see
right.
how it is part of like this one group. So you're writing these individual
yeah.
poems, but then they become part of meeting something that's greater than themselves.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
And you can have multiple mm-hmm. of these things happening.
Yeah. And I'm somebody at least who, I actually feel much happier and more generative when I have multiple things sort of going. Otherwise, I get a little claustrophobic.
Is it usually always poems, or could sometimes it be working in other art forms? Or is it always the poems are always part of it, even if other things are
yeah.
being made?
I mean, so I do make some three-dimensional work. I do some book arts work, and I certainly... That's still poem world, though. It's just a different facet of poem
How
world.
How
so? Well, so most of my book arts work is still language-based. So I still have language that's being incorporated, even if it's something that's three-dimensional or tactile or involves printing. And so I'm constantly still engaging with language, even if it's not in a word processor. But
maybe also even importantly
yeah.
and necessarily that it's not in a
yes.
word processor.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I really like doing finicky things with my hands, you know, like that's one of my tedious pleasure points is figuring things out by touch. And so it's really helpful for me, I think, to be able to engage with work, even if it's poetic work, but not just with my mind.
Yeah. And when you're figuring things out with like the making of something, it's still, well, one thing to say before, I hope now I have two things. I'm bound to forget one of them, right? Now I've forgotten both of them.
I love this. We're in the wilderness.
Yes, we are. Thanks for going there with me today, Kelly. Yeah, thank you so much.
In the wilderness.
That is the wilderness of so many chemical. That makes it sound a different kind of like an electric forest, which I'm not talking about right here. The necessity of making something with your hands and like feeling the textures, mm-hmm. I feel like hearing you say that, it makes me also realize that I did feel so much of the body. See, I did. Mm. I got back to it, Kelly. Mm-hmm. I found we're in the woods, but it's a nice mm-hmm. woods. Mm-hmm. Like that the body is so present in Fire Series. I mean, in the title, we've got the element fire,
sure.
right? And we've got the... like the disappearance, the conflagration, mm-hmm, like we have all mm-hmm. of this destruction and what's coming, but there's the body is so present in these moments.
Yes.
As well as like diamonds. And
yeah, sure, sure. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I don't know what to, I mean, I think that's a really accurate description of my work and I don't quite know what to say about it, in part, but you know, it's just, that's always been a part of my writing. You know, my first book was very much about...
Undershores?
Yeah, was about my mother and my mother's death and thinking about embodied experiences with that experience and how that might intersect with something like, an experience with a lover or like how are those two intimacies connected, intention, consonant even. So
some of those moments are present and blurred in poems.
Yes, I think
here
so.
In Fire Series yeah. too.
Yeah. I think again, it's one of those, I think a lot of people who have had a major loss or a major grief experience feel like that's something that you don't stop writing about. It's just part of your, yeah, it's sort of part of your firmament now, you know, it's a base layer. Yeah.
And I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm coming to your work from Fire Series. Mm-hmm. I knew of Undershores, but haven't read it
sure,
yet.
Sure, sure.
So there was a moment, a few poems into the book where you have this beautiful and startling line I wasn't prepared for it. Not like I should have been prepared for it. Oh, it's the second poem in the book. Kelly, you probably knew that's what I was maybe reaching back for, but, I don't know. Would you mind reading Goddess of Kite? I don't usually ask for folks to read, but if like a particular poem ever, but maybe since we're
so
we're
which you want me to read? So there are two God is a Kite poems.
I think it's the
first one.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. God is a kite. The tether pierces my palm. I would have given up my hands earlier for this relief of a bodily mark of the intangible. I have never been a person of faith, made as I am of stiffer stuff. Salt and tits and shallows. Shadow preserves snow. Each object has its own frosted cape in the shape of its shade. I am threaded through. I walk among the melting ice, holding or being held. Are you a kite or am I a doll hanging by a string? A lemon thread between two cans. Do I bring one to my ear in search of ocean, or do I drag them both behind my nuptial convertible, baby blue? Hearing nothing, I know my mother is still dead, and I am still a child.
Yeah. Thank you, Kelly.
For God is a kite. I love this image of like the begin with the titles in Fire series. I love like just even spending moments in the table of contents as you're paging forward. Do you like that too? When you just that.
I mean, I love, there are a couple of poets sometimes, or I've known, I think Ed Skoog sometimes does something where he will read his table of contents as a poem. Like it's one of his things. And I don't know
that
if I've never been quite that attached to titles, but I do love looking at a table of contents, and I love titles. I mean, I think titles do so much, and yeah, I could talk about them more.
They do. I think poets are sort of obsessed with titles, mm-hmm. like even more than other types of writers, like the work of a title, like even like towards like the last few in the book where you have nowhere,
mm-hmm.
it's like the playfulness also of mm-hmm. K-N-O-W,
right.
Where.
Right. And, right. Yeah, there's a lot of language play or sort of sound play that's happening in the book, and that extends to the title. I mean, I really think about the titles as being part of the poems, right? So
they can't not be.
Sure. Yeah.
Let's take a short break and then we'll come back.
Sounds good.
Today on Living Writers, Kelly Hoffer is here. Her book out with the Pitt Poetry Series. These folks always have good stuff. The University of Pittsburgh Press. You've got Living Writers. It's the fundraiser show on Living Writers. Call us 734-763-3500. Just give us a shout out because we're shouting you out now in like a way. Thanks for being part of the community here. I'm T. Hetzel. I want to also say I'd like to dedicate this show to Tex, Jim Mannheim. Tex, I used to do fundraiser, I think, before I met Tex and before he was a longtime engineer on Living Writers, in addition to all the millions of wonderful things like the Down Home Show, the starting the Polka Show, and all the things that he's done here at CBN. But I didn't know how to fundraise, like be in it until Tex was here. And then for a while, I just was like, Tex is here. He'll say all the things. And he'll say the magical things with his wonderful voice. And anyway, Tex, you're missed. And this one's for you. We'll take a break and we'll be back with Kelly Hoffer today.
I've got your picture that you gave to me, and it's signed with love, just like it used to be. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got your picture, she's got you. I've got the records that we used to share, and they still sound the same as when you were here. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got the records, she's got you. I've got your memory. Or has it?
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're just in time. Today on Living Writers, Kelly Hoffer is here in the studio. It's fundraiser week here at CBN, and today is the special edition Living Writers with Kelly Hoffer for fundraiser this year. Kelly's here in the studio. before she heads down to Literati Bookstore.
Yeah.
One of the best parts of Ann Arbor, Literati Bookstore.
So great. They do so much good programming. We're so lucky to have them.
And
yeah.
And I feel like now, because Kelly, we were talking before on going on air, you've been here for three years.
This is my third year. Yeah.
And so, you know, like, it's like Literati is like almost like a rite of passage for folks in the writing community here to be on their stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who will you be in conversation with today?
Yeah, so I'm really lucky today. It's actually, so there are three poets, me included, who all have books that have come out, you know, within the sort of month. And so we're reading together. And they are Tracy Zeman and Cameron Alexa Carter. And, you know, so Cameron is a MFA student in the program. And so really fun to be able to read with them. And just really exciting to have a sort of younger poet. And then Tracy is a lecturer in the English department. And so it's fun. It's kind of a celebration of various people that haunt Angel Hall, you know, but who are writing poetry.
Yeah, especially the third floor.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The third floor of Angel. If you know, you know. You know.
Many times in the Robert Hayden room.
Right, exactly. Or at the copier. Yeah. right.
That's so, where some of the best action. Yeah.
Yeah. But I really like that kind of event partially because I like, you know, it's nice to have three different voices who are going to be reading their work, and there's something for everybody potentially. So if you come and you're not a fan of my poems, that's fine.
Oh,
you know, because you might be just listening to someone else's poems for a while and find some joy and pleasure there. And I think, you know, aside from that, when I think about the three of us, I think we're all really sound oriented or sensitive to sound in this way that I think is not maybe unusual, but also not the most present always. And so I'm really excited about that. I think it's going to be a delight to listen to as a audience member.
Well, Kelly, I think it's, yeah, I'm so, thank you for making time to come here first.
Yes.
On your way
on
to
my
Literati.
Way. Yes,
to drop
it's really
by.
It's a pilgrimage. And I'm stopping here in the basement of the student activities building on my way.
It is a magical place. We're right across from the spinning cube.
Yeah.
It's.
I mean, when I came in and I saw the various ephemera that is plastered all over the studio, I knew I was in a good special place.
There are layers of stickers
yes.
and history in this everywhere you look.
Yeah. I mean, I think university radio stations are so special, you know, just really special places.
So did you do radio at Iowa?
I was not cool enough. I was not cool enough. And I wasn't cool enough to do it when I was in undergrad either, which was at Reed College.
Oh,
but the cool,
wow.
But the cool
Portland.
Kids. Yeah. But the cool kids really were doing it. And I always had a lot of admiration for them.
How exciting you went to Reed though, mm-hmm. as an undergrad. That
yeah.
seems like it would have been was that a good place for starting as a young poet? Were you writing poems when you were a kid?
So I was somebody who was writing poems when I was a kid. Yeah, I was. Not in any way that felt, you know, like I was a prodigy or anything. Like I was a pretty, you know, I don't want to.
And you were playing chess on the
right,
side.
Exactly. I was also like painting Monets. No. I mean, I was really lucky to come up in a household that was very supportive of creative life. And, you know, my mother especially was always just trying to put us in various kinds of programming, you know, art camp.
was she an artist?
She like, was not at all.
Is that how she lived her life, though,
not
as
at
an artist?
All. She was a physician, and I think actually felt, I think she appreciated art, but it wasn't something that was, she didn't consider herself a creative person. And so who knows?
Doesn't that make you crazy? Because I feel like everyone, everyone is creative, and we can open into it or open up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's also so much of being creative is also about a certain kind of attention, you know, and my mother was such a good listener. So that's, you know, it's just about where you place your attention. So, you know, different life, who knows, maybe in a different life, she would have pursued something different, but she was a wonderful doctor and her patients really loved her. So I think that was the right path for her.
Well, medicine is an art as well.
Yeah.
As well as a science, but it's a mystery.
Sure. And, you know, yeah. Anyway. I was at Reed.
And you were writing, but you, and you,
right.
Did you, when you were in undergrad, were you, because it seems like maybe you were already thinking, I'm going to take creative writing courses, I'm going to.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was really a nerd. So I was really somebody who I was an English major. I was taking all these literature classes. And at the time, I think I had some prejudices where I really thought creative writing was maybe not the most serious, you know, because I was just so concerned with, you know, sort of being quote unquote rigorous.
It's such a terrible word.
Isn't it is. It's just a tough one.
Even hearing it. Yeah. It's just the sound quality of that.
It does sound strict. but I was able to, in my senior year there, I took two workshops with a really, really wonderful poet, Jay Choi, who really just really changed my life. And I don't say that
lightly.
No. But it's just like I took those classes and suddenly was just so alive to what writing poetry could be for me. And
were you being asked to write poems, your own poems,
right? So
those
were workshops. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I guess it was also just her sensibility and her, you know, just exposing me to contemporary poetry, which had really not been a part of my canon up to that point. And she was such a generous teacher, and she really, early on, you know, was taking us very seriously. I mean, I don't mean to say that she was, but, you know, she was taking our art seriously, right? She was sort of saying, like, no, there's really something here, and you should, if you want to pursue this, you should pursue this, right? And I also really appreciated that she was thinking about a kind of poetic life outside of maybe a strict professionalization, right? So like just this notion of
living poetically.
Right. Or, yeah.
Well, like, I don't mean that in like a highfalutin sense,
sure.
Or like, oh, like all rainbows and right. Tra-la, tra-la. Not that.
No, but something about like how you can be a person who's making art, and that can be something that's sustaining for you, even if it doesn't translate into a kind of prestige. And, you know, at a place like Reed, which is so, was really wonderful for me in many ways, but is a lot about achievement, you know, and rigor.
Okay.
Yeah, I think really, you know, like being serious, being a serious kind of scholarly person. Mm-hmm. It was such a freeing idea to think that I could be making art, and that could be its own sort of sustaining practice, even if it didn't give me dividends in some other way, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm forever, forever, forever grateful for Jay.
Yeah. Shout out to Jay.
Yeah. Shout out to Jay. Big time. Jay Choi. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you still in touch?
Oh, yes. Yes. I think she's living in LA right now. And when, you know, like we message and we have a phone call every couple of years or something like that. But yeah, really lucky to have had her.
Yeah, because these people are momentous in our lives, aren't they?
And it only takes one, really, which is wild. I mean, I don't claim to be anybody's Jay, right? But it does make you think about teaching.
Because you're a teacher.
I'm teaching, yeah. And I just want to be able to give people that same permission, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And sort of belief and attention,
yeah, right.
Like going back to what you said,
right.
your mom was so, mm-hmm. so like strong at
yeah.
like this attention on the person who,
right.
who is there, the being who is there,
right.
the being who is making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I teach graduate workshops mostly right now, and
they're lucky to have you.
Well, I'm lucky to have them, but yeah, I'm glad to have them. And one of the things that I find is I get so involved in my student work that I can't actually do a lot of writing when I'm teaching, because I'll start writing and then I'll be writing a poem that is an unwitting imitation. You know, we did some generative writing in class the other day after we had workshopped somebody's poems, and I started writing about maxi pads, and I was like, this is someone else's poem. I am not a maxi pad poet. No shade. Like, maxi pads are great. But it was one of those moments where I was really feeling how porous that space can be.
But that's also can be sort of the wonder of it.
Mm-hmm.
And like working with minds that are also working, like if you think about like how painters work as well, right? It's that blurring of sensibilities. I think that's wonderful because that form can give that to you.
Sure.
Like you can find something through the constraints of form.
Right.
But it could be who you're with in the living days, or it could be the people you're with or you're reading.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I mean, I think one of the magical things about being in an MFA as a student and maybe as an instructor also is that you're kind of doing this weird art activity in a group, like everybody's doing it, but sort of in parallel.
Yeah.
And there are just moments that come up where, you know, first snow happens. Inevitably, every poem in the packet has something about
snow.
Right. You know, and so there's this way in which you're also like following the kind of undulations of the world, you know, through these various facets, these various voices, which is pretty special.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, today on Living Writers, Kelly Hoffer is here. We'll take a short break.
Sounds good.
And then we'll be back. And Kelly, thanks for picking today's music, too, for the program. I mean, thanks for letting me play the Eye of the Tiger.
Yes, of course. That indeed was not my choice, although I am pro. Yeah.
So, folks, give us a call. It's fundraiser week. Let us know you're out there, because we know you are. And thanks for being part of this community. And if you can also head to the website, WCBN.org. You can give us a call because we've got DJs Bradley here, Bradley C, Elias, and Sarah Min, and DJ Lamb Chop are all here in the house. I'm waiting to take your calls. So give us a shout out. We've got Reverend Andrew behind the glass. I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be back. Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, I'm so glad you did, because we've still got a good chunk of time with Kelly Hoffer here before Kelly heads down to Literati Bookstore for her reading tonight with the launch of Fire Series, out with the Pitt Poetry Series, and also reading with poets Tracy Zeman and Cameron Alexa Carter. So you've got it's like a poet extravaganza that's going to be happening just a few blocks away. And I think, Kelly, it's like with reading with other poets too. I love how you said
it's like you'll hear all of their voices.
Mm-hmm.
And right before we took the break, you were talking about the voices of your students mm-hmm. that are also when they're bringing in the poems in the packet.
Sure.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
And each has a snow, like a take on the snow mm-hmm, of some mm-hmm, sort mm-hmm. or... I love that. Like, it feels like you really value the poetry community, like being part of this arts endeavor.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting because I don't consider myself much of a collaborator. You know, like there are people who
they're so good.
Yeah, there are people out there who are constantly writing in tandem or you know, have wildly creative ways of producing art with a partner, and I really admire that. And I've done some of it and I've learned a lot from it, but you know, for me poetry is a pretty singular activity. But
it is.
But also you know, then that's just one side of that experience. And then, you know, you find readers or you have friends that you share things with and you do readings, right? You make present your work in that way. And
it's different putting the words into the space, especially mm-hmm. like with a community of folks mm-hmm. to be in this space.
Oh, yeah.
The energy is so different. And even reading the poem and hearing the poem read aloud, it changes the work.
Yes, for sure. And it's always fun for me. My first book, and I think this book somewhat too, was very various. I mean, like, there's a lot of different forms. There are a lot of pieces
yes.
that are,
yeah.
you know, potentially more narrative, some that are more lyric, things that feel more experimental, things that feel, you know.
You might even need to see it on the page
sure.
to have the
right.
full sense of
right.
some of these poems, like the ones where you're working with the King James version
Bible.
Of the Bible.
Yes.
Can
yeah.
you talk a little bit about those?
Oh, sure. Well, so, I mean, those were poems that came quite late. And it was because I'd been working with. I'd written all these poems, and I was seeing that there was all this fire that was happening, and then I was trying to think a little bit about, as I was rereading what I had, it felt like gender was a bigger part of the manuscript than I had realized, and anger was a bigger part of the manuscript than I realized. And that was fascinating. And then I was trying to think about...
Yeah, isn't that amazing
yeah.
when you have a moment? Because you were talking about that at the top of, like, when we first started mm-hmm. talking about finding what the poems
sure.
are about as you're, like, saying, oh, and these are a book.
Right.
These are in community.
Right, right. And so then I wrote a poem that had Adam in it. And I was like, oh, Adam, that's interesting that Adam's coming up. And then I started to think about Eve and Eve's potential anger. And I looked and I started. So
that
I started.
That poem is so good.
So I looked back at, Genesis. And I was like, oh, there's a flame is in this verse. And that was really interesting to me. And so much of the book is working through recursion, right? So a repetition of a kind of procedure. And so I liked the idea of multiple sort of renderings of the Bible, of that same verse, and then playing with an erasure of those renderings as a way of bringing out different sort of stages in that story.
And there's other poems that
yes.
have erasure used, but in a different way,
mm-hmm.
because with this series of the King James versions, mm-hmm. you see the shadow text under
right.
it remains. What was the choice? So for everyone out there, when you're looking at the page, you see, like, there is, like, visible text, but
right.
only just. It's,
right.
like, barely visible
right.
with the printing. And so you can see maybe what was taken. What was your reasoning for doing the erasure that way? Because it does change it.
Right.
And it has work to do.
Right, right, right.
The intention.
Well, so, I mean, I should first give some credit. So, I mean, the first place that I saw a sort of grayed out erasure like that would have been Jen Bervin's Nets, which is where she does erasures of Shakespeare's sonnets. And so Nets, right, comes out of sonnets. And she grays out. And so I really loved the invitation in the grayed out text to try to consider both versions of language at once, right? And so there's some tension or friction that is baked into the form there. And it also felt important, you know, I also like the visual of a kind of like grayed out text as something that almost feels like ash, right?
Yes.
So there was this way in which that actually felt faithful to a potential burning, right? Burning away.
Oh, I love that. I didn't even think of that, Kelly. And that's so, I love that because you have poems that directly are talking about fire.
Right.
And like the epigraph is slash.
Right. Right. It's a definition of slash, right? Which I did not know before, you know, writing this book, that a slash is the punctuation mark, right, that we all know and use and love. But it's also, you know, if you've ever heard the phrase slash and burn, right, that comes from this other definition of slash, which is to sort of cut down, specifically to cut down sort of extra foliage or greenery, and then burn it in order to manage land and manage forests, right? But slash can also, in its noun form, be the kind of detritus or the felled material. And so I really loved that. I loved that it had this doubleness.
And so much so that it's always present in the book. So when you pick up Kelly's book, which is also, I love like the design and the shape of the book. You must be so pleased.
I'm so pleased. And that's a shout out to the press and Alex Wolf, who's working there. And this, their book designer did a wonderful job. Yeah.
And so the title is there, Fire Series in block letters. But then there's a forward slash, and then two slashes, like right. Space, two slashes, and then three slashes.
Right.
And then the slashes are present within the pages of the book.
Right.
And even at one point, maybe three quarters of the way through, occupy a whole space.
Right.
Almost like Morse code or like Woodstock from mm-hmm. Peanuts or mm-hmm. something. Can you talk about, like, was that already in your manuscript, having
yes.
the slashes up
yes.
front? And how did you work with
yeah,
them?
Yeah, so, I mean, the slashes weren't something... They were later in the manuscript writing process, but they were there before I had submitted the manuscript anywhere. And so, I mean, I suppose I liked the sense of accumulation. I liked that it was a visual feature. You know, there are these pages throughout the book that have these slashes in various configurations. I liked that it was a kind of pacing feature for the manuscript.
It is. It almost seemed like you were using it because punctuation is pacing.
Sure.
Right. It's not just something like something that feels like a grammatical annoyance. Mm-hmm. Because it seemed like music then.
Right.
Like you were conducting us like how to like to spend time or to look at this otherwise blank page before you were looking to the right at
right.
the facing page.
Yeah. And you know, I had a student talk to me today and he was asking me, what do the slashes mean? And I was like, I don't know how to answer that question. And I think that the question that's maybe more meaningful for me is, what do the slashes do, right? What do they allow us to do in the manuscript, right? And so in thinking a little bit about a slash, just in the way that we use it when we're writing as something that both divides text and potentially, you know, makes a compound out of text is really exciting for me. So this kind of, like, that's such an intimate and fraught kind of pairing. And so I loved that. And I just wanted to see where that went. And I liked how I could sort of modulate intensity with the number of slashes that were on a page. And I was, you know, very early on when I was coming up with the title, and I shared the title with my MFA advisor, Elizabeth Willis, and she said something which feels true, which is that she really likes the title because a series implies something semi-ordered, but fire is very unordered, right? It's a kind yes. of entropy or chaos energy, and so I like that play that's throughout, I hope.
And having fire series.
Right, being, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I do too. I think it's wonderful. And just looking like, let's You know what? We'll take a short break.
Sure.
And then we'll come back and hear another
sure.
poem.
Happy
because
to.
Our time is flying.
It's waning.
Before we go to the break, we've had a call in from Sally. Sally, thanks for listening. Mm-hmm. Thanks for long time listener. Sally says, great show. Thank you. Mm. So Sally, we're thinking of you here. And thank you to all the folks out there who, no matter where you are, here in town or across the waters, anywhere you are out there, we're so glad you're part of our larger, like, WCBN FM community. People tune in, Kelly, at different, like, there's long-running shows, like, mm-hmm. on the weekend. I can't even begin to tell you the following for so many of these mm-hmm. shows. And then through the week, we have so many dynamic students who mm-hmm. are, like, coming in with like new things or new ideas. I mean, I guess no kidding, right? But yeah, we're just really, it feels like a good time for WCBN right now. And I know in the world, it's like a hard time.
Yeah, it's a hard time.
So, and community is so much more yeah. important now than ever, it feels like. So everybody, thanks for being part of the WCBN community. Thanks for being part of this, like being here with us today mm-hmm. with Kelly Hoffer. Mm-hmm. in the Living Writers community and Reverend Andrew and with all the DJs here that are so kindly being here with their time, Bradley and Elias and Sarah Min and DJ Lamb Chop. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers. We'll be back. So we are at the last. Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, I'm so glad you did. Today on Living Writers, Kelly Hoffer is here. Her latest book of poems out with Pitt Poetry Series, University of Pittsburgh Press, is Fire Series. And now I feel like I should say //////. Mm-hmm. Should I have done that
know.
At the beginning?
No,
what are you going to say at Literati
I think I just
next?
Say Fire Series.
Do you? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, punctuation is funny that way, right? It's often a pause is the way we
yeah.
articulate it.
So are you going to look meaningfully up?
I'll blink three times.
Yeah. Oh, man. I love it. Yeah. So Kelly will be heading to Literati right after this for her reading that starts at 6:30. Mm-hmm. And so you can get a copy of Fire Series in your hand and get to hear more poems. It is fundraiser show. Please give us a call if you'd like to give us a message. And just, it's 734-763-3500. I'd love to read it on air. But also, you can head to the website and click on donate, and then you'll see the gifts that are there. And just know that it's just great having you part of this community, everyone out there listening. And thanks so much, Kelly Hoffer, for coming today and being now... Like it or not, you're part of the Living Writers family yeah. and the WCBN family. So
that's great.
Good luck to you.
Yeah, thanks. A motley crew. Yeah.
A motley crew, which reminds me, I'm just going to read your bio
oh, sure.
in the back of the book because there's no time like the present. Kelly Hoffer is a poet and book artist. Her debut collection of poetry, Undershore, was selected by Diana Coy Wynn as the winner of the Light Scatter Press Prize. Her chapbook, The Photo I Don't Write About, was a Netscape Micro Series recipient. Her poetry was recognized as a finalist for the National Poetry Series in both 2020 and 2021. She currently teaches in the MFA program at the University of Michigan as the Helen Zell Visiting Professor in Poetry. And I will speak for everyone when I say, Kelly, we're glad you're here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And so what poem shall we hear from Fire Series? Yes.
Well, so because we were talking about Eve, I do think there are two poems in the book that are next to each other, and they're kind of a diptych, so they're meant to be sort of paired. And I'm going to read them. And the first half is called Eve on Fire, the hymn, as in H-Y-M-N. And the other one is Eve on Fire, the siren. Okay, and I'll start. Also, I should note, if I sound out of breath, it is because I am 34 weeks pregnant and my lung capacity is diminished.
It's being pressed upon.
It is being pressed upon.
Thanks again for being here, Kelly.
I'm delighted, but that is what's happening. Okay. Eve on Fire, the hymn. For years, I'd advocated for a horizontal transcendence. A body that wasn't mine, I was ready for. I paid for what I didn't know. A piano plays itself in a cavernous mall. So you have desire. What's next? There's more, and then there's less. A black streak across a tree. Something arrived, and it was too much. Something smaller survived the burning. The wind makes a flag of the geyser, carrying its white water across the sky. What does water stand up for? I paid to know a body that wasn't mind. Come to me for what you can't take out of me. The surviving thing, the smaller for it. Lilies rise up out of water. Where's the ground? Above their spindling reflections. He told me to rise up was redundant. I told him falling was a kind of birth, and the tide was big enough for both of us. Eve on Fire, the siren. I wrote horizontal transcendence, but it is ecstasy, the thing I protect from language. The most precious outpourings nurse a jolt, spinning inward toward a diamond. Refusing duration, but I keep on being, and can't help the mirror over my shoulder. Is the woman in the pain one of the captured? The internet a giant pool, and I go there to drink the internet of its substance. I search out the lilies I found in a photo coming out of water. They require a flood to flower, but are not water. They are not water lilies, lies the woman in pain. And what else would she be, only true like my mind in the named world, a figment in the literal? Two men tell me two somethings and ask me to arbitrate, but what is your name and where can I live, where the Medusa is not a woman captive in the desert? She is a cactus and is not a woman, a callus budding from her side, the magenta fruit, the waxy skin pocked, an animal buckling into its habit. Is not a woman, is not a woman, and here's an image of spindles and fangs, the shadow of a foot stepping on a diamond pattern that warns of is not a woman poison.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's a funny one for me to read. I mean, not funny. It's a strange one, and I'm happy to read it. I actually wrote that poem, or started that poem the first time I set foot in Ann Arbor. I was here looking for an apartment after I got a job, and I found myself, you know, in a bedroom writing that poem. So, Alpha and Omega.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for choosing that to read today.
It's fun.
Gosh, that makes it, yeah. And so interesting that it had already come up sort of in what we were talking about.
Right.
And then it had this other meaning.
Yeah.
That's the thing, like kind of living poetically.
Sure.
Like feeling the connections and being in it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, life's constantly happening and it comes up through your poems, and sometimes you don't realize that it's happening, like that that's happening, and people will talk to you and it's a little spooky how much they know about you from reading your poems.
That's true.
You know, it can be. Yeah, sometimes you're more naked than you'd like to be, even if you don't think you're confessing anything.
Right, right. Well, because sometimes we don't even see some of the things in, like you were talking earlier, Kelly, like recognizing, oh, some of like, oh, gender is coming up.
Right.
Anger is here.
Right.
Like underneath or bursting out. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. With sound, we talked about sound briefly, and I wanted to end on sound with you. Because with that, when you're working, how are you working with sound to make?
So I'm always reading out loud to myself constantly, which also means that I'm not able to write in coffee shops because I'm just kind of muttering to myself. But that's a really important part of my process. I'll also say that I'm somebody, I find that if I get stuck, sonic association is something that I often go to as a way of bringing in material that wouldn't otherwise be there. So that I find that really productive and generative. I find a lot of pleasure in sound. Like, I really love sound, and I can, you know, you can take me a lot of places in a poem if I'm enjoying the sound. It's really amazing what my tolerance is for, you know, certain kinds of nonsense or sense, you know, other sorts of sense that aren't the conventional mode. I was thinking that I was talking with another MFA professor, Wei Wei, who...
Oh, shout out to Wei Wei.
Yeah, shout out to Wei Wei. Yeah. must be a year or two ago now. And I was thinking about talking to him about how, you know, I grew up in the Catholic Church, very much not part of it anymore. In a pretty forceful way, not part of it anymore. But it meant that as a kid, I was reciting a lot of language in mass that was ritualistic, but also totally opaque to me. It wasn't even in Latin, but it was just so not part of my...
It was just sound.
It was just sound, right. But, you know, very rhythmic and having very specific, you know, patterning. And also, you know, there are gestures that go along with that, which I have to think more about. But I think that really primed me, you know, for a kind of sensitivity to an experience or connection with an experience that wasn't sense-based or like meaning-based, I should say, very much sensation-based, but not meaning-based.
Yes. But. Yeah. And I love how you said like sound, like you can trust it. Like you'll go with it. You'll go with it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And often, I mean, I also like the things that sound, you know, similarities in sound often also indicate a similarity in origin, right? So like if two words have a kind of resonance, they might have a shared etymology, not always, right? But there's something there that I think is also exciting, that you can potentially have this impression of family resemblance within language, right? And the bedfellows or like those family members can be quite strange. So it can take you places that you wouldn't normally go.
And strangeness is good.
Yes. Yes. For me, for sure.
Yes.
I'm very much, I like the strangeness.
Kelly Hoffer.
Yeah.
Same here. Thank you for being here today. And thank you for your poems in Fire series and before and the ones coming. And thanks for being part of the fundraiser, the very special edition fundraiser edition for Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. It's fundraiser week, folks. Check out WCBN.org to find out the events that are coming down the line to be part of, because we've got that great fundraiser show at Blind Pig coming up. And also, while you're there, click the donate button and be part of our once a year fundraiser. Oh gosh. And Kelly Hoffer has so kindly brought one of the Fire series, one of the books, hot off the press, literally just launched into the world yesterday.
Correct.
And so, Kelly has signed it. So it is waiting for you for your donation. Mm-hmm. So if you are the one, let us know and we will get it to you. Thanks to Reverend Andrew for engineering today. Thanks to Jason Adam Voss for pulling the songs for today's show. Thanks to all of you for listening out there. A special shout out and thanks to Sally, my mom. And thanks so much to Kelly Hoffer for being here.
Please, thank you for the questions. It's a delight.
And Kelly, now you're off to Literati Bookstore.
I'm literally walking.
You can all point your feet or your GPS to Literati Bookstore. I'm T. Hetzel. Until next time.
You say you like the wind blowing through your hair. Come on, roll with me till the sun goes down. Texas sun. Say you wanna hit the highway for the engine roars. Well, come on, roll with me till the sun goes down. The Texas sun.
This is WCBN FM Ann Arbor. We're waiting on a sports come on, show, so perhaps we'll play a little bit of music until we show up and see what happens. So this is Fundraiser.
Texas sun.
So if you want to call in at 734, pardon me, 734-763-3500, that's the number to call. And if you want to donate, you can always go straight to the website, WCBN.org.
Texas sun. When I'm far from home and the cold winds blow, stuck out somewhere, folks at home. Cause you keep me nice and you keep me warm. Wanna feel you on me, can't wait to get back there again. Texas sun. Texas sun. Texas sun. You say you like the wind blowing through your hair. Well, come on, roll with me till the sun goes down.